10 years ago this month, Wisconsin Public Radio's Western Wisconsin studios introduced a new program called The West Side. It was the first regional news and issues-based call-in show on WPR and has served listeners in greater western and west central Wisconsin ever since. This evening, we celebrate the 10-year anniversary with a brief look back at the origins of the program and a wider look at the evolution of media in western Wisconsin over the past decades. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side 10th Anniversary Special. I'm joined this hour by a slew of guests, and we'll work them in and out as efficiently as possible. But first, I'd like to talk a little West Side history with original show host Mary Jo Wagner, who hosted the program from 2002 until her retirement from WPR in July of 2010. Mary Jo Wagner, thank you so much for coming back to the West Side.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's hard to believe it's been 10 years.
Time does fly when you're having fun, right?
That's right.
All right. And I'd also like to welcome longtime West Side producer, Henry Lippold. Henry, thanks so much for being on the program this evening.
It's my pleasure.
And as always, we want to hear from our listeners. The number to call in for any questions for our show host, Original, and the original producer, the number is 800-228-5615 to call in. And then later this hour, we'll look into how other media have evolved in western Wisconsin with a look at print and broadcast. For the print discussion, we'll hear from Eau Claire Leader-Telegram editor Don Hoopsher and assistant director for the Rivertowns newspaper group, Steve Zube. Then we'll talk broadcast media with Tom Kozer, CEO of Kozer Radio Group in Rice Lake, and online and social media director for WEAU TV 13, Russ Flack. But in the meantime, again, we want to listen or want to hear from our listeners. The number is 800-228-5615. I'll start with you, Mary Jo. Let's begin at the beginning. And before the West Side went on the air, let's talk a little bit about why you wanted to begin a live call-in program like this.
Sure. Well, we had been doing regional political election-related events and forums since in the early 90s. I had started here in 1990, and it was just a few years later, and Dean Kallenbach had been working on this, and together we started doing just elections, just every 2 years we did those, and it was so successful, giving candidates an hour to talk about the issues and to have a chance to be heard in the community. And that was so successful that when the idea of giving more voice to the regions came up in Madison by the head of public radio, then because we had this election experience, Dean said, let's go forward with the opportunity to do this every week and do more issues than just politics. Let's branch out and give voice to people in other areas. And also, this would be their call-in. They would not have to go into the Madison and Milwaukee call-in phone banks where you don't get much chance to call in. So
right.
This was that chance.
A lot of times people are waiting 30, 40 minutes to get a call-in.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, Henry Lippold, did this program, the West Side, and the regional programming, for that matter, the election coverage, did that fulfill a need in this region?
Oh, yes, especially the granting of time for the political reports, the interviews, the semi-debates, and they covered everybody. They didn't leave anybody out, no matter how much of a beginner the person was in politics. And some of them didn't know very much about what they were running for, as I recall. But no, I think it served a grand purpose.
So,
as far as I know, nobody else did that.
Right. And why was that just the way it had always been? Or?
Well, it's a lot of work to put one of these programs together. And you would know this, Rich, if you're going to pick a topic and you don't want just one person, you want to find out, because we only have 1 hour to do this topic, you're not going to do it, visit this topic again tomorrow.
Right.
And the day after that, which in Madison, our main office, they have more of an opportunity to do several chances at a topic, and we just had one. So finding them, and that's why Henry came in to such great help to me, retiring from the university in journalism. He knew how to dig out these people and how to find them. They didn't come in on the fax machine or in press releases, doing some of the subjects that we do. talking about homelessness or the different issues with addiction or agriculture or fishing or hunting. A lot of those topics just are out there happening, but they don't come to us in an easy way.
Well, over the years, I've gotten to know many people, and I also knew where to look for information to augment the great mounds of information Mary Jo already had collected on a wide variety of subjects. So we had a good starting point.
It's always fun to play off of Henry and say, oh, Henry, but not that. How about this or how about that person? And the two of us could...
I'll say from my own experience, coming in pretty cold to a program like this, I had hosted a program in Shawano, but it was much more local. I mean, much more kind of just topical conversation. And I had heard that I had a couple of volunteers to help out. And Henry Lippold, of course, a wealth of knowledge that knows everything about everything in Eau Claire. And also one person that's helping us on the phones right now, Mr. Mort Cypress. What a treasure trove of political knowledge, and what a great asset to the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was indeed. He knew all the political people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He knew all about politics.
And we went at this as a news program, so to speak, trying to not just have one person's opinion. We went in as journalists. And that meant that you ask some tough questions if you need to, but you give people a chance to answer, and then we can re-question them. Well, wait a minute, I don't get what that meant. What mm-hmm. did you just say? You just fed us a line of something that was more rhetoric than anything. Help us understand what that really means.
Now, you mentioned, Mary Jo Wagner, that the program was kind of brought up by regional manager Dean Kallenbeck and also the director at WPR at the time. So this wasn't really a hard sell? It just was kind of what they wanted to do?
No, because when you think back to when the regional bureaus were set up, the notion was we need to have more of a regional presence, and listeners will buy into the notion that this is their station, this is their people. And actually having an office here meant that it was easier to bring people in as well. They could travel here. We could call them up and as often as possible, we could bring them into the studio and not have them on the phone. That isn't always possible, as you know. Some people are just too far away or can't commit to an hour-long program. But that made it nice to have the regional bureau.
Incidentally, you haven't mentioned that we did it twice a week in
right.
the early days.
When we started, yes, we had the opportunity.
I could not imagine twice a week. I've got my plate full enough keeping it to one day a week. Why was there that change from two to one? Was that your decision, or was it out of your hands?
It was out of my hands, and it was an idea to the notion to start regional programs all across the state. And because many didn't have any experience doing that, it was like, let's standardize this and go to one program here and all over the state.
All right, we've got a caller on the line, and it says Dean is on the line. I imagine that's Mr. Dean Kallenbeck, and he'd like to speak to the show's origins as well. Thanks for calling in, Dean.
Oh, sure is, and thanks, Rich, and Mary Jo, good to hear you on the air.
Well, thank you.
Hey, I don't want to take a lot of time from these folks because we've got a lot of guests to get through, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about the show's origin. We really had, there were four points that made me confident that we could make this thing work, four resources that we had. One was, Mary Jo touched on, we had that experience doing those political forums, and those worked so well, and we got such strong reaction from them that was a resource that just wasn't available anywhere else, where people, you know, with a call on the telephone could talk to these candidates and ask them questions that mattered to them. We saw that was something that was very important. We also had the call-in experience in 1984. We had started a program called Mental Health Today with Dr. Manette Ponick, and
okay.
So we had a little call-in experience with that, even though it wasn't the same type of program that we're talking about. So that was one thing we knew we had. The other thing I knew we had is we had Mary Jo Wagner, who was deeply respected as a journalist in western Wisconsin. She'd been working for Wisconsin Public Radio already when we started the show for a dozen years, award-winning journalist. And I knew what her capabilities were as far as her ability to research and as far as her ability to ask good questions. The third item is the fact that we had probably the most prominent, in my mind, the prominent political scientist who knew about Wisconsin politics in the state working as a volunteer, and that's Mort Cypress, the guy who week after week takes those telephone calls And I know Mary Jo would attest to this, that those questions that Mort feeds us as he's listening to the program really helps when you're hosting the show. Mm-hmm. And finally, we had a Hall of Fame journalist, Wisconsin Broadcasting Hall of Fame journalist, in Henry Lippold, probably the most recognized broadcast educator in the Upper Midwest, who was available to help us week after week on the show. So with those sorts of resources, I think the show probably would have just bubbled up and happened without us even trying. But I was really confident that it would work well, and I'm certainly not disappointed with the results. I think it's been had a tremendous impact in Western Wisconsin, and I'd just like to say congratulations to all involved, including you, Rich, and have a great show.
Will do. Before you go, Dean Kallenbeck, yeah. I'd like to ask you, are we going to see more of these type of regional call-in shows across the state in a Green Bay or Milwaukee anytime soon?
I'm driving back from Milwaukee now. Some folks may know I'm not only the regional manager for Western Wisconsin, I'm also the senior regional manager for Wisconsin Public Radio, and I was just meeting with the regional manager in Milwaukee, and this was one of the topics we were discussing. And there is not a specific plan, but we've been going through some strategic planning, and that would be a desire. I'd like to see that happen before I'm done. To see every region have the opportunity to have have a program like this, because there are some topics that are geographically regional in nature and are not going to get the time that they need on a statewide basis.
I hear that. All right. Well, Dean Kallenbeck, thanks for calling in, and thanks for being part of creating the West Side.
And thanks for the kind words.
And anybody wants to know what Henry looks like, he's in this morning's Leader Telegram, right on the front page. And
I was at the program for the elderly.
And he always has a notebook with him, so you'll know Henry by the notebook and pen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Mary Jo Wagner, I'd like to talk about some of your favorite experiences or most memorable experiences from the West Side. Can you pin it down to one? Can you boil it down like that?
There was a great program. Well, there were many, many great programs, but one of them that comes to mind, and I always wonder how this gentleman is doing right now. He came to us. We found out about him. He'd been in and out of jail and prison for most of his life, and so talked to us about being a drug user, drug sales, just couldn't seem to put it all together. And he got in contact with the Salvation Army. There's a homeless shelter in the western part of the state, and turned his life around. And he came to us and talked to us about that. It was just really insightful. We can talk around or about issues, but in the West Side, we always said, can we talk right to the person that's involved in this? And he came and talked about turning around his life, and then we followed up, and a year later he came over again, and it was one of those things that if you want to learn about a different issue of some kind, whether it's mental illness or drug and alcohol, we talked to several people involved in that, talked to them directly. And
we asked a young woman who was using methamphetamines.
Right, we did, yes. And if you want to, I think of our audience as thinkers, educated thinkers, but you don't know what you don't know. So if there's a topic out there that you're a thinker and you don't know about, where are you going to find out about it? Hopefully, Henry and Rich and Mort, we will all have thought about a topic and we'll know where to go to get it. And one of the things, when I've given speeches, I always think back to what Susan Stamberg from NPR said, and she said this a long time ago, but she said, our microphones, I call them magic wands, are waved against silence, darkness, incomprehension, and misunderstanding. Mm. Every time I read that, I think that, think through that, I think it's more than just, well, let's get this side and let's get this side. It's much more than that.
A lot of power involved, a lot of meaning and subtleties as well. Henry Lippold, could you boil it down to any one, like through your wrangling of guests or researching or just being part of the program, could you name one example that really was memorable to you?
No, I can't. but many of them were tough. For example, in, was it 2007? 2007, they wanted to do some sand mining, silica sand mining, over near the Hoffman Hills.
Right.
And there was protests against it. And so we were going to do a program, and we could easily get people who were opponents. Mm. But to get proponents, that was very hard at that time. People would not want to, the owners, the mine owners, would not want to come on the program. And that was very, very tough. Now I see that they are more willing to appear. But that one does stick out in my mind.
And then part of our job as a host is to be the other side. And people think, well, you have a side. Are you taking opinion on this? No, I'm just saying those who favor this would say that and hopefully get out as many opinions on the misunderstanding or incomprehension of that topic as we can.
I call that playing the devil's advocate a bit. Now, since we're talking about the media and the evolution of media in Western Wisconsin, I'd like to get your takes quickly before we go to break. Mary Jo Wagner, in the last 20 years or so, how have you seen media change in this part of the state?
Well, Rich, you probably would not even know about splice editing tape.
I see there's a machine in the back room, and it scares the bejesus out of me.
We had reel-to-reel editing at that time, and we played sound on off of little things we called carts that had little sound things on them, and so that has changed a lot. But you're right, the ability to just have this studio here, this is just great to have this the equipment and the ability to put people together and send it all out to Western and Northwestern Wisconsin is really great. Now, I didn't do any Twittering. Maybe you do that, but there's a future coming to, you know something about something, tell me, let me know, and I'll be right there to talk to you.
Right. Henry Lippold.
Well, quickly, I don't think radio has evolved. It's devolved. Hmm. When we first came here, I think we had WEAQ, WBIZ, WAXX, WMEQ, WISM. These all had news departments. WWIB did some. They had people who were out at meetings. If you went to a city council meeting or county board, there'd be a whole row of radio reporters. Now, there's oftentimes none of those and maybe one person from the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Mm. So that is something that has happened over the past couple decades. The consolidation made one news person capable of doing four stations or six stations, and we didn't get any additional hires, and we probably got a lot less news.
All right. With that, we're going to talk more about the consolidation of the media in Western Wisconsin when we do come back. But Mary Jo Wagner and Henry Lippold, thank you both for taking time to join us on this 10th anniversary special.
Well, thank you for including us, and good luck to you. I can tell that you know what a tough job this is.
I appreciate the toughness and the challenge and the reward that comes with it. So.
Yeah. Thanks, Rich.
And now that we've talked about how the West Side was conceived and grew over the past decade, we'll broaden our scope and look at the evolution of local media, first with print. I'm Rich Kramer, and when we return, we'll hear from Don Hoopsher of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and Steve Zube of Rivertown's Publishing Group. This is the West Side 10th Anniversary Special. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side 10-Year Anniversary Special on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're celebrating this hour by looking at how media has evolved in the Chippewa Valley and greater western Wisconsin. First, we look to print media, and we're joined by a local name here in Eau Claire. Don Hoopsher has been the paper's editor at the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram for 13 years and managing editor for 12 years. He's also worked with newspapers in Janesville and Fort Atkinson. Don Hoopsher. Thanks for stopping by.
You bet.
And also, we are joined by Steve Zube. He's the publisher for the River Falls Journal, New Richmond News, Hudson Star Observer, and Pierce County Herald. He's also an assistant director of the Rivertown's Publishing Group. Steve Zube, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks, Rich. Nice to be here.
And again, I wanted to let the listeners know that you can call in with your questions or comments for our print media moguls here. All you have to do is give a call to 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. And we are getting close to the bottom of the hour, but first I want to start with Don Hoopsher. I haven't been around this area for very long, maybe just over a year actually, but I noticed that for my hometown newspaper, the Superior Telegram, it used to have a bustling newsroom just full of reporters, and now there's just a few. Has there been a consolidation or a shrinking of news departments in Western Wisconsin or at the Leader-Telegram?
Well, we have, I mean, we don't have the number of reporters that we used to. I mean, it's not down, you know, to bare bones, but, you know, we probably have, four or five fewer people in our newsroom than we did 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it's just a sign of, how people are getting their information. And particularly younger people are not getting it through the printed paper as much as they used to, which is no secret.
Right. Well, how do you fight back against that?
Well, I guess the only thing we can do is keep continuing to try to do what our paper's done for over 130 years, and that is to cover the community as comprehensively as we can and give people what we think is pertinent information and important information people need in a system of self-government, and do a lot of the other things as far as covering, you know, health and education and entertainment, and hopefully, you know, people will understand that. And, you know, I mean, people still read what we do. I mean, mm-hmm. They just read in a different way. I mean, we had 2 million page views last month on our website and 200,000 wow. unique visitors. So, you know, it's not that people have abandoned interest in what's going on in the community, but a lot of them, they're just getting it in different ways.
And I've noticed that first of all, when I first visited the newspaper for a press with Western Wisconsin Press Club meeting, I was impressed with how many reporters you still have and getting out there and covering a lot of area. So kudos for that. But is consolidation has there been any consolidation of maybe companies that own the Leader Telegram? Or there used to be two, a morning and an evening paper, wasn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, but that went away, 1970 or something like that. We are a family-owned newspaper, one of the few left in America, actually, dailies. So I can't speak to that. There, you know, obviously the major chains, the Lees and the Gannets, you know, while they have maybe not folded papers, they are certainly sharing staffs. They don't have the number of printing facilities they used to. So, yeah, that's been an ongoing deal.
All right. I said we were up against the break. We'll break right now for Wisconsin Public Radio News at 5:30, but we'll have much more with Don Hoopscher and Steve Zube when we come back after Wisconsin Public Radio News. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the Westside 10-Year Anniversary Special on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're celebrating by taking a look at the evolution of Western Wisconsin media. First, we're looking at print. I'm joined in studio by Steve Zube, publisher of the River Falls Journal, New Richmond News, Hudson Star Observer, and Pierce County Herald, and also an assistant director for the Rivertowns Publishing Group. And we're also joined by the editor of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram, Don Hoopscher. If you, the listener, have noticed any changes for better or for worse in your mind in about local print media, give us a call and let us know. 800-228-5615. The number again is 1-800-228-5615, and you can also post on the Westside Facebook page. We start off with a brief look before the break on how media is changing, how online news and is kind of challenging print media. And Steve Zube, I'd like to ask you, we heard from Don Hoopscher, the print at loggerheads with online news sources like... in Hudson, there's the Hudson Patch. Is that a real challenge?
You know, it was a splash when it arrived, but we haven't seen any marked change. We don't know what their numbers are. Don, we are measured. We know exactly how many page views we get in a month through independent audits with Google Analytics. And our page views have grown logarithmically in 9 years. I look back on some circulation figures in our print across four newspapers in these four communities that we serve, or four areas, has dropped about 2.5% a year, and that's paid readership. And the newspapers consider 2.3 rereads per paper. You assume your family's going to read it and gets passed along. And at the same time, our page views have gone from, in an Ellsworth, a Pierce County Herald, maybe 7,000 per month to now 30 to 40 unique visitors, not page views, but unique visitors.
Okay.
So we have more people coming in reading us than they used to.
Now, speaking of the online presence, Don Hoopscher, the Leader Telegram has an online site that offers a lot of the stories that you see in the paper. But is it just recently that that you've started charging for that service after so many articles? I think it's 15 free articles, right?
Yeah, it's been a while. I can't remember when, but within the last year or 6 months, I honestly don't remember. But yeah, I mean, and I was talking to Steve before we came out here, is that in order to have trained journalists go out and cover news and go to city council meetings and do all the things they need to do, you have to pay them. And in order to do that, that means that their work has some value. And it has for many, many years. And when you pay 50 cents or whatever it is for the paper through the years. And so if you turn around and give it away, it's telling the public, we don't think this information has a value. And it does have a value.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you have to make the business model work so you can pay your people to go out and do that and that they would go to school and get trained to do that.
Right. But isn't there some pushback from people that are spoiled and used to getting their media for free from the Leader Telegram? I mean, when you first instituted the pay, was there a drop in online usage at all?
You know, it didn't go down that much. But yeah, I mean, there was certainly some pushback, and maybe that was our fault for making it free for all the years that we did. But I think, you know, it's up to us then to make the information valuable enough that people will pay for it.
Right.
And, you know, if we don't, then maybe we don't deserve to survive. But that's certainly what, you know, we do every day. We go to work and say, how should we cover this community? What are things people should be concerned about? What should we be concerned about? And, you know, we work hard every day to put a paper out that we feel reflects those wants and needs. And that's our challenge.
And what does it mean to you when you hear a media mogul like Henry Lipple that was in just before talking about how a lot of times when he's at meetings, which he still goes to every meeting under the sun locally here in Eau Claire, that often he doesn't see anyone except for someone from the Leader Telegram. Is that to be expected from you, or is that still good to hear that you're actually out there doing it?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for anybody else, but I mean, that has always been what the local newspaper has been expected to do.
Right.
And it's why we have First Amendment protections, is so, you know, we can be a check against power, both public and private. And, you know, we have to take that responsibility seriously. And the way you do that is go to the meetings and sit in and listen to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Steve Zube, your newspaper group represents a number of weekly papers, and I'm wondering, have weeklies seen more popularity during the last couple decades or less? I mean,
as I mentioned, our maybe the hard numbers, subscribers, the paid readership has gone down slightly, 2.5% a year, but page views are going up. We still have the feet on the street. We have as many people, I think, if you were to compare 10 years ago, we're down 2 reporters across 4 communities. That's from 18 to 16. But those people are now, instead of a 40-hour, 5-day week, they're expected to work 24/7. When something happens on the weekend, we want to get it on the website.
Mm-hmm.
We don't put the entire story out, and that's probably the difference that's helped us to hang on to print readership. You're going to pay for it. We're going to give you a premium. You're going to get information that you will not get on the website. And a lot of that is public records, that where some products may choose to put that on the web. We hold that for the print subscriber. So.
And are your Rivertowns.net, it's a little bit of a different model for online news. It's like kind of a conglomerated site from a number of the smaller papers or the weekly papers. That seems free to me. Do you have to pay for that?
No, it is free, Rich, and that we see it as kind of a regional portal. As you know, on the western side of Wisconsin, a lot of people are torn with their loyalties. They're not sure who their governor is. I think they know now. But we're deluged by Twin City Media. So
right.
That's our attempt to answer for Pierce and St. Croix and Dunn and Pepin, to a lesser extent, some daily state Wisconsin news. And so we use it as kind of a portal and a jumping off spot. A lot of our page views at the various weeklies come through that portal.
But how do you make money on that then? I mean, are you
advertising?
Just advertising.
Advertising on
okay.
the site gets a lot of page views, and people want those eyeballs. And we have a lot of different web products that we sell. So.
And for the River Falls Journal, we actually recently switched getting our subscription in paper form to the online version. And that's an online PDF kind of a format. And,
right.
It seems like there's so many different kicks at the cat for how to monetize online newspapers.
And that really has nothing to do with online. That's more about delivery. That with the changes in the Postal Service, if you go to Scottsdale for the winter, you may wait 2 weeks to get that product. This way you can read it Wednesday afternoon, okay, real time. So it's a great advent to be able to use the Internet that way. But folks are paying a full subscription for that.
Now, I'm wondering, I'll ask both of you this, but first I'll start with you, Steve Zube. Will there ever be a point where all online newspaper or newspapers that have online presence, it's all pay to play or play to read? And will that kind of help maybe against the pirating that happens sometimes?
I guess my personal opinion, I don't think so. I think it would be like having all pay TV. You know, there's going to be Luddites like me who don't have cable and continue to watch off-air TV, and that's good enough for me. And I think that is part of what we're trying to figure out in the print media, what's good enough. For a lot of people, they're so deluged by information that they get a little tidbit, they get a headline, that's good enough. We still have that loyal reader who wants the whole story.
And Don Hoosier.
No, I agree. I mean, there's advertisers that want to be on the web, and so we want to have a presence on the web, because if we're not, somebody else will.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that, we're going to take our final break here on the West Side, and we'll bid adieu to print media and the moguls that we had. Don Hoopscher and Steve Zube, thank you both so much for being part of the program, part of the 10th anniversary West Side special. When we come back, we're going to talk about broadcast media and how it has evolved with the times. We're going to be joined by Tom Kozer of the Kozer Radio Group and Russ Slack of WEAU TV 13 when we return. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side 10th Anniversary Special on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're celebrating this hour by looking at the evolution of media in western Wisconsin. So far, we've talked a bit about the West Side itself, along with print media, but now we turn to commercial broadcast media. And joining us for that discussion, we bring in Russ Flack. Russ Slack. I've got that stuck in my head. He is a online and social media director for WEAU TV 13.
Yeah, WEAU 13 News. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much, Russ Slack. I appreciate the corrections, as always. And joining us by phone is Tom Kozer. He's CEO of Kozer Radio Group with stations in Rice Lake, Hayward, and Escanaba, Michigan. Tom Kozer, good to have you with us.
Rich, great to be part of the program.
I appreciate you being able to call in. So, listeners, I also want to ask you, and what do you think of the state of broadcast media? Now is your chance to call it like you see it with our guests by giving a call to 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, I'd like to go right to you, Tom Kozer. And again, I don't know if you were listening to the program earlier, but I'm going to bring in a little personal experience here. I worked for a while at a group of radio stations in Duluth, Minnesota, and I remember the first day that I walked into the building, a building with six radio stations, I was really shocked to see that there wasn't any live on-air DJs at the time, and there was just one board op in one station. Is that the story for radio overall, and what about the Kozer Radio Group based in Rice Lake?
Well, certainly, Rich, I think that experience that you had probably epitomized the early days and the experimental days of consolidation after the 1996 Telecommunications Act that enabled companies to be able to own more radio stations in one market. And in fact, that was one philosophy that a number of companies took to try to become more profitable by eliminating staff and eliminating people and doing less localism, if you will. And that's one direction a lot of companies took, and there were certainly mixed results with that. My experience has been that those companies that tried to do that may have experienced some short-term gains, but long-term, really, I think, really kind of committed some radio suicide, if you will, in their markets because they lost touch with what makes local radio great, and that is being involved in your communities and being a part of a community. And I kind of took a different approach to that. I was, at the time, we had two radio stations here in Rice Lake, and I also owned a couple of radio stations in Rhinelander and some in Escanaba, and I had to expand by buying more markets. I sold the Rhinelander station so that we could purchase our crosstown competition here in Rice Lake, and then we consolidated our operations. And during that time period, when we did consolidate our operations, we did not consolidate positions. In fact, our staff grew. We added salespeople. We added one additional news person, and all of our staff stayed pretty much the same. And I think we gained benefits from that because my idea was to be hyper-local and to provide even greater services to a community than what we had before, and to take two good radio stations that we had just purchased and make them even better by adding our other people to it. And so I think those smaller market broadcasters that have taken that approach, and certainly it's been our experience in all of our markets, the more local that we're involved and the more we're involved with our communities, the better. So two different philosophies, but and I think it's played out now that the real successful ones have invested in their communities.
Hyper-local, for someone that doesn't know or isn't in the radio business, what does that mean?
I think, Rich, it for me, it's a term that we use to say, hey, we're going to give to our listenership and our community things that they can't get anywhere else in the new technology world. I mean, there's a lot of choices now for people to be able to get the entertainment that you want. And you can take your nanopod, mm-hmm. and put all the music that you want on that and take it anywhere you want to go. You're out jogging, you're in the boat, you're going anywhere else, you can have all the music you want. There's Pandora and satellite radio and internet radio and all those things to be able to get all the music and things that you might want. But the thing that makes local radio different is providing all the other things that you can't get anywhere else. Local news, local information, high school sports, discussion about issues that are happening in your community that are unique that you can't get anywhere else. Severe weather, emergency situations, mm-hmm. and I'll bring up the deer hunting tragedy that happened up here in just north of Rice Lake a few years ago.
Right.
It was here at the radio stations that people turned to. In fact, the sheriff's department turned here to the radio station to disseminate information to get the right word out, and you can't get that on satellite radio. You're not going to get that on Pandora. And so those are the things that I think that make us viable for the future, is to provide information you can't get anywhere else.
Now, I don't know if you heard Henry Lippold talking a little bit earlier, but he mentioned the fact that at least in Eau Claire, radio stations used to have just a whole gang of news reporters, but now there's one, really. There's more than one, but it's really been reduced. How many reporters do you have on staff in your Rice Lake stations or at the stations other than in Escanaba?
Well, if you go back 25 to 30 years, historically in this market, we've had two news reporters and one at each facility. And then when I bought the competition in town, and we kept the two. And so we still have two news reporters that gather news. One is a lead person, and then we also have other people that go out and cover stories and things. So our staff, and again, it's just my philosophy of how to do local radio. Is that, and I think that's a difference between having local ownership and having corporate ownership. Corporate ownership from the outside, if they're running the company from San Antonio or they're running it from someplace in a corporate office, they don't know what the needs are in your community, and so they kind of have a cookie cutter approach to running the radio stations. And if you're a local owner and you live there in your town, in your community, you have a much different feeling. And so I guess my operations would be more of a throwback to the old days of radio. It's far more expensive. It costs us a lot more to do that type of radio
than to get a satellite feed from Denver or something.
Exactly. And I mean, there's virtual news offices now where somebody in three states away will call your local sheriff's departments and their school districts and try to get stories and write news. And the only difficult thing about that is that as circumstances change and they change quickly, you can't handle it. And sure. so we've just made those investments. It costs more to do it, but we think it's the right way.
So when we talk about the satellite feeds and the conglomerates, one name comes to mind, and that's Clear Channel. I think they own thousands of radio stations,
they do.
Don't they?
Yep, and radio stations in Eau Claire.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, now let's get to broadcast TV and Russ Slack. Again, I'll get that name right. Your job is to keep the online presence for WEAU TV 13 humming. And so what does an average day for you look like when you get to work? What does it consist of?
Well, for me, I do the internet side on the sales side as well. So I work with the news department some, but typically the news department themselves handle the website on their own. So they're posting stories, they're creating stories that they're going to run on air, but they also post them online. We have a philosophy that if it's going to be on air, we actually put it online. We may even put it online first. A lot of times we do.
Right.
Along with putting it on WEAU.com, we also put it on our Facebook page, and we also Twitter about it as well. Not every single story do we put on Facebook. We use Facebook more for utilizing individual stories that we feel that people are going to make discussions about. We use Facebook to kind of get conversations going. WEAU.com, obviously, we drive traffic there for all of our stories, and people are able to comment on there as well. But you can't get the same feedback you can on Facebook, something like that.
Right, the interactivity. So I'm news centric here because
sure.
I'm a reporter myself. But does the news department get story ideas from Facebook?
Yes, actually, this last week we actually got one story that came in. Unfortunately for the situation, the 12-year-old girl that killed herself this last week, someone had posted that on our Facebook page, and we actually followed that story.
Wow.
We felt it was very pressing because it talked about bullying, and we really wanted to try to make that key point in a lot of the stories we've done this last week.
Okay, and I was talking with the print media folks here just a while ago about monetizing the online presence. Are we going to see TV news stations that have website, are they going to be charging for their online content?
No, we won't be charging. Typically, we're making our money off of display ads that are on the page. We're averaging around 500,000 unique visitors on a monthly basis.
Wow.
And we're doing close to 3.5 million page views on a monthly basis. And we're also doing a lot of mobile product. For example, in the last year, we've increased our mobile product by over 100%.
Mobile product?
When I say mobile product, I'm referring to what they call as a WAP site. Basically, if you have a smartphone or even something like a Razer, which is not considered a smartphone, if you type in WEAU.com, it'll go to our mobile site, and you're able to see the same content just in a simpler form on your cell phone. Then we also have apps. We have our app on the Android platform, an app on the iPhone platform, and also an iPad app that people can download.
Hmm.
And those are becoming more and more popular.
So if we can boil it down, in your opinion, Russ Slack, the media, broadcast media, whether it be media or print, the Internet, is that the game changer here?
I feel it is. What's going to happen, I think, is everybody's going to be utilizing the Internet, if not their mobile phones themselves. They'll have smartphones where they'll be able to get broadcast television. They'll be able to get radio directly to it. Some people are actually going away from getting home computers completely and just doing smartphones in other countries, that is.
Hmm.
And that may happen here in this country as well.
Well, I'd imagine if the wired infrastructure wasn't there, maybe wireless would be the way to go in other countries.
Right.
Tom Kozer, now what kind of online presence does Kozer Radio Group have, and are you looking to expand that?
It's a huge growing area for all broadcast, and certainly we're not at the level that Channel 13 is. It's a tremendous site, and there's so many services and information that's available. It's just it's outstanding. It's a great example, really, of supplementing the broadcast aspect with the internet, and we're doing that now. Our sites certainly provide. Not only information about what the radio stations do and what the programming is, but we use the internet to post our newscasts are all online, our sportscasts, and in fact we also post some high school sports after the games have been played. We'll put those up there. We're doing more and more. We're utilizing Facebook to do a lot of interaction with our on-air personalities, things that we talk about in the morning shows. People will chime in and have discussions on our Facebook pages, and I see Facebook as being a real connector for you know, for radio stations, certainly in the future. We need to do more. We're doing more. We're in the process of transitioning to do more information-based and contest-based with our web pages also.
All right. Well, I wish we had more time for this discussion, but that's what we've got, and I'd like to thank all who've made the Westside 10th Anniversary Special happen. That includes our guests, Russ Slack, Tom Kozer, Steve Zube, Don Hupscher, Henry Lippold, and Mary Jo Wagner. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, a special thanks to Mr. Mort Cypress for handling on-air production for all these years. And kudos to Grace Fair, Ellen Zamaripa, and Dean Kallenbach. We'll be back next Thursday with a look at the team court in Dunn County. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.